Welcome to the Public Services Reform Podcast from the Centre for Market and Public Organisation. My name is Ramesh Vitalingam, and today I'm talking to Sarah Smith about her research with Anita Ratcliffe on fertility and women's education in the UK. Sarah, can you start off by explaining what you mean by the word fertility?
Yeah, so what we're really talking about is the number of children that women have and also when they have it, what age they have it. So we're basically talking about childbearing.
Okay, and now you've looked at changing patterns of childbearing across the UK over many, many decades.
Yes, that's right. So the government statistics, they produce what's known as a total fertility rate, sort of the average number of children a woman would have in a particular year. And that sort of clearly shows a decline in childbearing across the population from a peak, the baby boom of the early 60s, to today. So that there's been a fall in the average number of children women have from around about 3 to around about 1.7. So that's a kind of change over time. And we were interested in looking behind that overall trend at what was kind of driving the changes. And our research and research by others highlights a sort of number of different trends. So one, that the first kind of like wave of change was that women sort of started to limit the number of children they had. So among women born in the 1930s, having three or more children was relatively common. The first big change was that more women chose to reduce or limit their number of children to two. So that was the first big change. And then later on among women born in the 1950s and 60s, what we've seen is an increase in the number of women who don't have any children at all, so a rise in childlessness. So as I said, so the two main changes are a fall in family size, people deciding to stop at two rather than carrying on, and then afterwards an increase in childlessness and a rise in one-child families.
So what's going on there? What do you think is driving that? Is it just changing social mores? Is it the advent of the 60s and all that kind of stuff? The arrival of contraception? Is it something to do with women are working much more, staying in education longer? What are the big forces driving this, do you think?
Well, we tried to explore some of the possible drivers of change. I think it's very hard to disentangle really what's going on, because you can look at a lot of the associated changes that are occurring at the same time as the changes in fertility. So for example, there was the introduction of the pill in the 1960s, and which became increasingly widespread in the 1970s, and that was clearly a factor in allowing women to limit their family size. Although whether the pill drove women limiting their family size or whether women's desire to limit their family size accelerated the pill, it's hard to really say what drives what, but clearly the pill was an important factor. Another important factor that we've looked at is the changing pattern and nature of female employment. So for example, among the women born in the 1940s who were choosing to limit their family size to two, what you see is they basically had their children quite early in their life and then stopped, and you see a big increase in female part-time employment among those women kind of in their late 20s and 30s. And then among the women later on who were born in the 1950s and 60s, among whom we see an increase in childlessness, they were the ones who really started working full-time, particularly those who didn't have children, suggesting to us that these women were facing a choice between career or family, and that a lot of them increasingly were choosing to have the career rather than the family. So as I said, again, you don't know whether it's the employment that's driving the fertility or the fertility driving the employment, or changing kind of attitudes that are driving both. But clearly, the employment and contraception are all kind of coming together to shape the sort of changes in childbearing that we see in our data.
Now, education, you think, is also a very big issue.
Yes, well, we know from previous research that women who go on to, say, college education have very different patterns of childbearing to women who, say, leave school at 16. So, for example, they start their families later, as you'd expect, because they've been into higher education, so that kind of in itself would result in a delay. And more of them, historically, more women with college education have remained childless. So one obvious question for us was, well, we know that there's an increasing proportion of women going on to further education. So is this rise in female education enough to explain the changing patterns of in childbearing that we see? So basically what we did is we split women into those who went on to higher education and those who left school at 16, and then looked to see whether we could see changing patterns in childbearing within each group, or whether it was the case that it was just the shifting kind of populations between these groups that could account for the changes in fertility. And what we found was that there was a kind of the biggest changes in fertility were among the group of women who'd gone on to further education. So they were increasingly delaying entering motherhood, and they were more likely to remain childless than they were before. So basically, I think to kind of summarise the story is one of increasing polarisation between educated and less well educated women. So among women born in the 1940s, those who went to college and those who left school at 16, both of them were likely to start childbearing in their 20s. They weren't likely to work full time if they had children. If they worked, they'd work part time. When you look at women born in the 60s or 70s, the story's very different. Women who leave school at 16 are still likely to begin their childbearing in their 20s and are not likely to work full-time if they have children and even at all, whereas women who go to college now are much more likely to delay until they're 30 before they start having children and are much more likely to try and combine motherhood with full-time employment. So really, I guess what we put it down to is the growth of careers among women who go on to college. You can't explain the whole of fertility changes in terms of changing education. It's the changing effect of education on what women then do in terms of career and family. That seems to have been the biggest change over the period.
So this polarisation must have very serious implications, doesn't it, to divide the female population in this way between those who have some education and those who haven't.
Yeah, so someone's referred to it as the end of sisterhood. I'm not sure whether we go that far, but clearly we're now seeing this increasing divergence in terms of women's experiences. And in terms of sort of economic consequences, one of the sort of issues that we'd raise is the effect of essentially childhood. One of the things that we've thought about is the effect of college-educated women having careers on the sort of incomes and family resources available to them when they have their children. So essentially, children born to college-educated women are now born into households which have greater income and wealth at the time of birth, because these women have been working, they built up higher incomes and higher levels of wealth. So essentially, you've got an increasing divergence in resources in the households of children born to educated and less well-educated women. Now, so the interesting thing is the effects of that on children's subsequent development. I think the research is kind of suggested rather than really clear, but it's sort of pointing to the fact that income when children are young matters. So, if these children are born into households where there's more income, that's essentially saying that you might see consequences for children's development as a result of women, college-educated women, choosing to delay having children until they're sort of better off.
So this seems to link very, very closely to the whole discussion of social mobility recently about supposedly declining social mobility in this country.
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't like to sort of say how big a factor this is, but it's certainly in line with decreasing social mobility. Essentially, educated households can afford, have higher incomes when their children are born, and those children will be better off at birth, and that may well mean that they're better off throughout their lives, which would kind of reduce the level of mobility and increase the disadvantage to children born to less well-educated women.
So what lessons would you draw for policy from this? Are there things that government could do on behalf of us all to address this polarisation problem?
Yes. So, I mean, in terms of government response, I guess you could think of two different approaches. So one is obviously the need to focus on early years provision for those who are less well off, which is a focus of government policy anyway. And there's increasing concern about the sort of advantage that children from better off backgrounds have, even by the age of three. So focusing on the early years and trying to redress the disadvantage is one approach. And then also in terms of encouraging childbearing among educated women, because that they're the ones among whom we've seen the biggest increase in childlessness and the biggest delay in childbearing. So clearly, the more women, educated women, are able to combine family and career, the sort of earlier they're likely to have their children, and the less we'll see a kind of continued increase in childlessness among that group.
Final question, Sarah. How do we compare with the other countries? Have you looked at changing patterns in European countries and the United States? Do you have a feel for what's going on there?
So I'm aware of some other research in other countries that are sort of beginning to look at similar issues. In the US, the US pattern is very similar to the UK in that there's divergent patterns in childbearing between educated and less well-educated women, just like the UK. And we know that in the US, provision for maternity leave, for example, is worse than in the UK. So suggesting the harder you make it to combine career and family, the bigger changes you get in the fertility of educated women. And at the other end of the spectrum, in Norway, research has found that the trends have gone the other way. In other words, that the fertility of educated women is more like that of less well-educated women. And as we know, they're at the other end of the spectrum in terms of maternity policies and childcare provision and allowing women to try and combine family and career. So I think it's pointing to the real importance of these policies, maternity policies and childcare provision in affecting the fertility of childbearing of educated women.
Sarah Smith, thank you very much.